features and some colleagues as well. I want to share a few thoughts, and the thoughts I'm going to share certainly are not mission or unique or anything that I would say better than anybody else, but certainly just through, you know, myself, a decade and a half of marriage, including ups and downs along the way, and seeing other people, just perhaps to crystallize some of the issues, the thoughts, experiences I'm sure many people here have experienced. And at the end, if people feel that they want to, obviously this is not the forum to bring up anything of a sort of private nature, but perhaps to raise issues that maybe we all go through, and how the resolution of those issues, if people feel that they want to bring those attentions to the fore. I want to begin by saying that there's an amazing idea of Hanshulavit, that at least part of this idea is well known to everybody. And then if you see the interaction from a couple weeks back in Parshas Vayera, so everyone knows the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that is Mar Mako, and that is the source that a person is allowed to be Mishane, a person is allowed to lie, change the truth, stress the truth for the purpose of Shalom. That's the third example given in the Gemara. And of course, the person, the entity that was Mishana in that case is the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu saying that Sara said about herself that she's too old. It's an amazing Gemara, this amazing idea of itself, that to think that after so many years of marriage, that there was a need to be Mishana, that what Sara said, so often when he said, the very concept by itself is significant. And then further on, what Rashi points out is that when Malachim asked about the presence of Sarah Imenu, so what are they doing asking where Sarah is? Of course, Rashi points out that it's to increase the chavivus, the recognition that Avraham Avinu had of Sarah's level of tzniut. So the Rosh Yeshiva, Chaim Shmulevitz, says there in that place, this is an amazing idea, right? At the age of 99, there was still the desire to be misaking somehow an element of respect for each other, shalom bayis. There was still the ability to grow in the relationship between these two great gedolim. And it's an amazing idea that process of growth in shalom and growth in respect is not something that all of a sudden a person masters after a year. It's certainly not something which only we struggle with. But it's a lifelong that every week, every year, every decade, we can look at our marriages and say, you know what, we've grown, we've improved. And that's something we always go through, no matter who the person is. And that's what Chaim Shmulevitz pointed out. I don't know what I was thinking when I first got married. And I don't know what the conception of B'nai Torah is, that somehow the beginning parts of marriage are the best. Right? That somehow that success in marriage is linked with passion, and I'll speak openly that it's linked with the tremendous like zeal and passion, and often kind of linked with physical emotions as well, and that somehow that was almost like the zenith of marriage, and then, you know, as time goes on, it was like a struggle to maintain that original passion. That's perhaps the image that I first had. To the credit of Yeshiva University, what's going on this evening with these sort of things never went on 15 years ago, and no one ever spoke to anybody, no one ever had the idea of a chassan shmooze or this or that, if it didn't exist. It was like, as much as one can perhaps rightly criticize things that still go on in YU, like no one had any clue, no one was ready for the physical elements of marriage, which we've all discovered is not as simple as our conception might have been. No one was ready for the emotionless issues of marriage. And with time, I think what I have, I'm sure all of us recognize, is that simcha in marriage is really something that in a good marriage it increases and develops with each passing year, with each passing decade. There is an amazing concept of Revolbi. Revolbi says in Al Yishur Chelik Beis that he says that what simcha really is when you take two opposing forces in the world and you mesh those two forces together to create a new entity, to create something which is new, something which is vibrant. He says that's why the Medrash tells us that we rejoice in the rain, because it says it's a connection between Shemayim V'aretz, two opposing forces, and the rain somehow creates a tether between Shemayim V'aretz. every time, says Rav Volbi, that simcha is mentioned, it's a bringing apart different entities. It's a molding together of two different entities. And for many people, that molding together those two entities are simple, right? I'm me, I'm perhaps not super complicated, whatever the case may be. I'm me, you're you, and all of a sudden, you know, 2 months later, we have this incredible new entity of our marriage. I've mentioned before, I don't know if anyone has ever had a dating shmooze I gave her before, but to some degree it's the same thing in dating. Sometimes, you know, you're struggling and back and forth and no clue what you're doing and breaking up and getting back together. And other people, it's like, you know, it's like, it's amazing how it's in the first date. You know, my roommate when we were in NYU, I'll just mention this as a sort of side anecdote, you know, I was struggling with dating, the normal processes that people go through, and he started dating this girl from Teaneck, and like right after one date, it was like an 8-hour date, and they were in love, and it was like you know, amazing from the beginning. And he used to, this was going back and forth cell phones, 93, 94, around then, imagine such a time, no cell phones, no text messages, no calls during the day. There, it was like, if you want to make a phone call, you have to like wait, you know, like 30 people for the one payphone, you know, where Cohen's payphone and the, you know, next to the bathroom. So everyone was like waiting there to call. He really avoided having to make phone calls during learning time. And so he would go to sleep at 2 in the morning speaking to his, you know, fiance in T-Mac, right? And then I would wake up 6 hours later, he was still on the phone, right? And he was asleep, but I was like holding the phone. Right? 6 hours phone from New York. And this would go on every single night, every single night. 6 hours, 7 hours on the phone. So I said, Brian, I said, what are you? That's one of the Galbert family from Miami. Right, so what are you doing? I said, you're asleep, she's asleep, right? So he said, well, she's going to wake up, right, and I'm not going to be there, and the phone's going to be closed, and she's going to feel deserted, so I'll stay on the phone all night, so she feels, like, you know, the comfort that she's not going to be alone, like, on the phone. So that sort of came to an end when Brian's father, who is not the ancient imagination poor, called up with, like, a $2,000 phone bill, you know? So their going out was smooth, their Shana Rishona was smooth. That meshing was a seamless meshing of two personalities. Some people are like that. Some people are just the opposite. If you think about the idea that a man has one totally divergent personality and his wife has different personalities, their nitiyas are totally different. The way they respond to stress is totally different. One person's emotional, one person's a little more distant, one person is quick to temper, one person is afraid of anger, one person's parents never fought, one person's parents always fought, one person, and somehow you're going to create a meshing of these two personalities, and that's going to happen after a month, or 3 months, or 4 months, until you really form a bias, right? Ishto hibeto, beto hi ishto, that you really create a new entity together, like Nasik Basar Echad, that's something that takes years and years to allow that meshing into the single entity to take place. And along the way, like anything else, when you try to mesh two things where there are loose ends and angles and differences and personality differences and all those things, so along the way, that's not a smooth path to that process. Right, along the way, the bumps, but even more like the hills and the valleys and that, to sort of get to that point, obviously is incredibly difficult, and the assume that's going to happen, you know, in a short period of time, it's not realistic. Now, I want to mention, in that context, you know, some of, and I'll be honest, you know, this was some of the issues I went through, Shana Rishona. I'll say, this again is 14 years ago, that the worst time of my marriage, or the first 6 months of my marriage, and I'm comfortable saying that, because Baruch Hashem, again, my wife and I have a wonderful marriage, and it's not so germane to this, but certainly looking back on it from a distance, without a doubt, it was an awful period of time. I don't want to be too dramatic, but certainly a trying period of time, and maybe just sort of maybe to give a face to, or to mention some of the issues. And now that I'm past that stage, and I can look back sometimes when I meet with couples, or I'm somewhere on Shabbos, or there's a couple that I see around me, or a couple come speak to me, and someone will sort of reflect back and to see some of the issues involved. And I don't know if this applies to anybody here, it applies to everyone, it applies to nobody. You know, a person gets married to somebody, you know, they were going out, they were engaged, from the interaction they have with the person, obviously they love the person, they see miles in them, And then all of a sudden, you're living in the same room with the person. You're living in the same apartment. And you're spending every Shabbos together. You're out together. You're at each other's parents. You're packing up. You're doing, you know, three-day yontifs at your in-laws. And all of a sudden, where from a distance, from a hand's breadth, you felt tolerant to the person, now all of a sudden you feel that you want to break away from the person. You feel sometimes intolerant of the person. All of a sudden, a mannerism that didn't bother you 3 months ago, all of a sudden now you're living with the person, and you're spending Shabbos meals together, and you're telling yourself, this is the person I'm going to be married to my whole life. All of a sudden, the mannerism, a laugh, the way of expression, all of a sudden now that becomes something which is bothersome. The person begins to feel that, not to verbalize it in this way, but I was single, I had a sort of comfortable life. I know everyone here intimately, so I can say that everyone here had options of 100 people to go out with, and now, like, to some degree, feeling that, not touching on them, but to some degree, you feel like a person in the first part of marriage feel a little bit trapped, a little bit, like, tethered in a way that isn't always pleasant for every person. You know, sometimes, especially in a community like this, where couples get together, so you get together with another couple, and no one wants to ever look, but you begin to think to yourself, why does it seem that, you know, my wife or my husband, we'll say my wife in this case, that somebody else is thoughtful and deep and adding to a conversation, that person seems to be a big learner, that person seems to have the ability to have a neat apartment and cook and have a job and learn and give a share and do this and that, and my wife seems overwhelmed by just to keep the apartment clean. Why does it seem that my wife doesn't have much to add in an intellectual way or a thoughtful way to a conversation? These are very common things that exist at the beginning stages of relationships. And the communication skills at the beginning of marriage aren't always there to be able to talk about it with somebody else or know how to express those feelings. So instead they come out, and I'll say that I was guilty of this, in the most destructive of ways. You know, like side comments, you know, snide comments, sarcastic comments. Instead of being able to say, this is something that I'm upset about, then all of a sudden you're upset about 25 things. And instead of an argument's not always the worst thing, being about one specific issue, then there perhaps is a built-up resentment about a lot of things, and all of a sudden it's this, and this, and this, and this, and I'm like that, and all of a sudden, you don't necessarily, a person doesn't have the communication skills of how to sit down and say, I'm bothered by this, let's talk about it, but instead there's a frustration that gets built up. That's not in every case. What I may be describing now may be much more so than anybody here is experiencing, but a lot of the elements, I think, are common. And in ways that the couple doesn't even notice, the man speaks to the woman in such a way, or just looks in certain ways. And certainly those elements can be destructive in Shana Rishona, and just not feeling as close as you want to feel. The amount of times I've spoken to guys in Shana Rishona, and whether or not they put in these words or not, a disappointment. And you feel like your whole life or the shameless of being married and miyakavatya echad and all of a sudden now do you feel like that, oh wow, I'm like a new person, don't you feel shameless? I feel like sometimes you feel sometimes in ways that frustration. So why don't we focus on five different issues of just during the course of Shana Rishona, of things that a person be conscious of, something that I still have to work on, all of us have to work on, and something just to maybe one can concretize to these five specific things, or a specific eightsome, then perhaps even though a marriage may be great, it can go even to the next level. Okay. So the first issue, and before I say this, I want to maybe make an embarrassing self-reflective point. I think everyone here was involved in amazing things before they were married. You know, people were in task, or doing this, that, or doing that, or doing, you know, whatever the case is. Everyone deems themselves to be a balcheta, to be a good person. I would ask you, are you a good person? Everyone thinks they're a good person. Everyone is a good person. But the truth is, I think if you think to yourself, in front of how many people in the world do you feel comfortable being the true you, right? You never want to embarrass yourself in front of your friends, in front of rebellion, in front of, to bring out a person's worst side, dark side. There's probably only one person in the world who sees your real dark side before you get married, and that's usually your mother, right? That around your mother, you don't mind sort of showing the side that you wouldn't show anybody else. You don't mind, like, you know, not having proper cards to show, or if you get to fight it. I'm not saying it's always the case, but, like, usually people don't know so that's the case. If sort of the real you, if you think about sort of the image of like an operational mode, like the real essence of who the person is, that hasn't like come to the forefront. It's marriage that gives it opportunity. That all of a sudden you can say, ah, this is who I really am. These are my real challenges. These are my real Cicero nodes. And let me really begin to work on myself. Not in some sort of conceptual way, sitting in a base marriage with Mr. Sharon. Not in some conceptual way while feeding the homeless in the lower side. Not in some conceptual way where I think I'm being masakin myself. But the Chadar Chadarim, with no one else around, let me take a real look at the essence of who I am as a person. So while that's challenging, the opportunities for real tikkun midos is something that exists in this apartment or in your apartment in ways that can never exist anywhere else. The first area to focus on is obviously the Mishnah about the Gevura, the person who's Kovesh at Yitzro. Medrash says that Biburei Koach Ose Devaro. That refers to what? Anybody know what the Medrash is talking about there? Biburei Koach, the person who's a Gibor, does the Kashbar, who's the Devar Hashem. Anybody know what Mitzvah is referring to? It's on the Shemitah. The person who's a Gibor is the person that sits there and watches his field, right, lie fallow during the year of Shemitah. That's a Gibor. The guy is not a Gibor who's like huffing and puffing. It's the guy who's holding himself back. So let me mention something that I'm sure is familiar to anybody here, either in their marriage or in their parents' marriage, that sometimes the last thing that we do is act like a Gibor. There's a famous story, I'm sure everyone knows, about the Rebarach Ber. It's a famous story that is like told so many times. The Rebarach Ber thought that he had a problem with his temper. His kids were so nervous around him, and there was Rebarach Ber, he was very strong personality, very unbending, which is not really a bad thing. And so he felt for a period of time that he was like sort of too intimidated to his kids, so he had like his angry hat and jacket, right? Okay, I'm not going to get upset yet. Okay, I'll go to my closet, I'll put on my hat and jacket. Like by that point already, he's like trying to get his jacket on, being a scarecrow, I'm like, trying to wear a scarecrow, I don't want to impinge on whatever. So by that point already, he's like, what am I doing already? So like, the ruler of going to the closet, I always thought, you know, I mean, it's a great story, but at a certain point, okay, just put the jacket on already, and then you get angry. Like, you know, at a certain point, like, all the tricks you sort of pull on yourself, like, not do something, you know, you sort of need a new trick after 6 months. The jacket doesn't work, you know, 10 years later, but, so that's to some degree the guru. Now, something that I believe that we all have struggles with is how to be guru in the context of a relationship, right? Your wife gets upset about something, and you really know that it's something to do with you, or you really know that her reaction to something will sort of blow over. She's anxious about something. And instead of just ignoring it, or instead of being supportive, so that you have to, you know, respond to it, or you take it personally, or it becomes an issue. Two people get into an argument of sorts, and you know for yourself that if you walk away now, the whole thing will blow over, or you can say something else to further incite an issue, right? Or you want to get in like a last word. The person needs to feel they have like a last word on something, or they need to say something else. That's called not being offensive. That's called being a behemoth. Right? It's called like having no control over yourself. Like I know right now it's nothing productive if I say this, if I comment on that, if I criticize this. But you do it anyway because you can't control exactly whatever the emotions are. That's called again, no offense to anybody here. That's called being a behemoth. It's called not having any control. And that's really the opposite of guru. And other examples as well is that, you know, sometimes a person wants to criticize, and we'll express this up in a moment, so you can criticize at the right time, you can wait a day, you can find the right words for how to say something, right? Or you can say something right away. You know, you leave your parents, you do this, do that, and you need to say something right away. That's, again, that's giving in to a base instinct. If a person had the self-control of every time they criticize, they thought to themselves, is it the right time, is it the right place, am I using the right words, is my wife in the right mood? And every time there's a disagreement, the person says, am I doing something to add to it or to just to blow it up even more? That's the gevura that needs to be worked on every single day in every single interaction. It's one point just to think about. Another point, and to me, certainly, this was a major turning point in my marriage. It's also an equally famous story of Shlomo Zalman Orbach that appears in the book from the word Jerusalem, the Hannah Teller book that came out right after his death, which was, I guess, 15 years ago. Maybe Shlomo Zalman passed away 15 years ago, about that, 14, 15 years ago. So when he passed away, so the story was told, and it's told differently in different places, that Shlomo Zalman was asked before his wife's death, did he ask Mithila from his wife? And he said, I didn't. I had no need to, right? You didn't have to feel it after all these years, 70 years of marriage, whatever it was. He said that I had such like a daily image of my wife as a sacred Torah, and my wife for the qualities and kofas that she had, I couldn't even bring myself to get upset at her. I had such a consciousness of her being a sacred Torah. You know, so easy that a person gets married and to really focus on those things which are inadequate, not spiritual enough, not Torah-oriented, not this enough, not that enough, not a million different things that can come up. We tend to lose sight of our own shortcomings. And especially during Shana Rishona, that becomes, those shortcomings are just focused on and harbored on and like stewing around in a person's head. I'll tell you one last anecdote about myself is that, you know, when I first got married, so a lot of the same things. You know, I was always, when I was in YU, you know, always like sort of thinking about something and thinking, you know, I was always like, you know, whatever the case was. I got married to my wife, a person person, but not the same type of like conflict and stewing and talking everything out. And it always created a certain level of attention in our relationship. I just wanted her to be more ruchani, more. So when we were giving birth to our first child in Eretz Yisrael, which was about 10 months after we were married, so my wife had this like 35-hour labor. Like one of these started like Friday night after dinner, it's like December, like 6 o'clock at night, and she finally gave birth at 3 a.m. Sunday morning. It was just like a total like nightmare, you know, to the hospital, back to Shire Tzedek, walking back from Shire Tzedek, here, there, like it was just one of these like unbelievable experiences, and just back labor, back, like on. And the whole time through the labor, like she was apologizing, you know, to the nurses because it was taking so long. The doctor had to leave the family with the shop to come in. She felt awful. She had me going to the cafeteria to bring food for the whole staff, right? So she's sitting here like knocked out, and like all she was like, thinking about the whole time was about like the care of the staff, and she's like writing notes to them like 3 days later, and she bought the present. And it was like the first time, like instead of me sort of thinking about my assessment of what it means to be like a bas aliyah, right? It was, wow, like a married to an amazing person. But it's like a matter of sort of change of focus. Instead of, you know, constantly trying to look at one's wife in your image of who you are and then trying to somehow create that in your Ezer Kenegdo, really valuing the incredible quantity and quality of strength that every person's spouse has. So when you have that attitude, it's a complete like new leap on life in a person's marriage. Focus on the positive of a person's spouse. There's a third element as well, which should be obvious, and that really is something that maybe not all of us were great at earlier stages, but it's really productive communication, something that we mentioned before as well. It's hard to imagine that any issue can't be handled when you find the right way of communicating with another person. I always feel like never talk about something standing up in a rush. Sit down on the couch, and everything has to be like a therapy session, but after the long day, or after kids are asleep, if you have kids, or after, and sit down and have a normal communication in that sense. If you can really communicate, this is what I'm upset about, this is what you're upset about, this is what I have to work on, this is what if you could work on, to talk like normal people, and when a person can do that, it changes everything. There's one thing I would say as a source of concern, especially a guy who came to me last year and he was sort of describing his girlfriend and became a Kala and now they're married, and quite honestly I was like terrified for the future of their marriage. So and hopefully things at the time will be well. Many marriages start off rocky and get better. But like she refused like to hear criticism. And she's like so sensitive about it. So sensitive like everything that he said. Now obviously it doesn't mean that we should like point something out every day. You can like sort of kill a person already. Like, oh, by the way, and oh, by the way, yeah, that's not a big deal. But like you can dig a person's grave by constantly, even in gentle ways, criticizing. But if a person doesn't feel as though they're reflective on themselves and they want to change and they want to grow, and then the other person mentioning to them something, you know, occasionally becomes know, a huge issue and oversight. In other words, like that, to me, that is like the biggest red flag in a marriage. A person that's not self-reflective, not willing to grow in the context of a marriage. And if you feel for yourself, if you feel that your wife has that trait, it's certainly something that, you know, should be addressed. I'm not sure in what context, but certainly something that is certainly the biggest red flag for a marriage. Number three really is that, and I really put this in responsibility of the male, to set the tone in the family of how to communicate properly and how to express desire of yourself to want to grow as well in a relationship. Issue number four that I want to mention is the idea of stress and anxiety in marriage. And I think all of you here, right, you can say Tom's working already, and Zev is working, and, you know, but, you know, anxiety already exists at this stage of marriage. Money issues, I'm not sure, you know, how much people worry at this point of a marriage. But, you know, if I contained a picture that perhaps on the outside doesn't look so rosy, but is really realistic, that if you want to have down the road a family of, you know, three kids, four kids, whatever the case is, right? And that means working hard to afford a house or afford an apartment, or start whatever the case may be, especially if you want to learn for X amount of years, to try to like run a family and make a living and get your kids like dressed and out of the house and fed and have food in the house and have laundry done and have the house not be a total mess and have your kids not be falling apart in a million different ways. And your wife is working, and you're working, and you never spend time together, and you never have enough money, and there's never, you haven't been out for 3 years. I mean, like, this is like normal daily life for a person. You ask a normal married couple, you know, when's the last time you were out together? Oh, 6 years ago we went to Mabat, you know. 10 years ago we went on a trip, right? Well, when's the last time the family had dinner together? Well, we have dinner together once every 2 weeks. Sometimes I'm with family, you know, and trying to, like, kill yourself to make a living. I mean, me personally living in Muncie, buying a house which is, I guess, the cost of a normal, you know, wooden air Bergenfield house, just that alone, you have to make, you know, $5,000 a month just to pay for a house. You know what I mean? The house itself is $5,000 a month. That's $50,000 just on the house, besides anything else. So that means the amount of working and trying to keep a family running with all that going on. So, and then this person's ill, and your family, the parents are getting older, and this person. And stress and anxiety of money, of moving, of kids, of a home, of running a home, even the way that you're doing it now, of looking for a job, of finding a job, all the various things that you're experiencing, but will only get 10 times exponentially greater as time goes on, so it creates a tremendous level of anxiety in the relationship. And if I have to raise one other red flag, which everyone here has met already, so I don't think it's too late, but, you know, one other significant factor, probably the most significant factor in a marriage, is an amazing Zohar that discusses the idea of Yisurin. So Zohar says that the reason Chazal are so positive about Yisurin, and about, you know, Chavivin of Yisurin, is that what Yisurin does is that it almost, like, eliminates the physical quality of a person's body. A person says, okay, my body itself is not so significant. Okay, I'm sick, I'm this and that. And it elevates and it highlights the quality of the soul. Yisurin almost negates and wipes away the outer elements of our existence that perhaps are less significant, and it highlights that which is central. And to some degree in marriage as well, if anxiety at your stage of life causes distance, your wife can't handle whatever is going on, you can't handle what's going on, money concerns create tension, whatever the case is, that's an issue. That's an issue that needs to be addressed. You know, under the best of circumstances, what life stress does is bring the people together. We have this to worry about, we have our kids to worry about, we have the home, we have our decisions, we have our future. All these things create anxiety. Let's use those to create even a stronger tension between the two of us. Let's use those to highlight and elevate the relationship, the kedusha of the home, instead of allowing the anxiety and these external things to rip apart. If a person can learn that midah at a relatively young stage of their development, it completely changes the rest of the person's life. Two last things. The Maharal, I'm sorry, this is going longer than I planned. The Maharal that discusses in Sivas Olam, that he just mentions the Medrash, that a person with a lay tov, the Zoka for Ruach HaKodesh. Amazing Medrash. The Maharal is very beautiful in his discussion of that Medrash. person the late of Zelkaruch Kodesh, person goes through life wanting to give and to love and be positive and compliment with marriage, with children, with friends, with rebellion, with students. It's a dimension, it's a quality that changes all of life. But the attitude is, have I today said four nice things to my wife? It doesn't have to be fake. Oh, by the way, this picture for you. I mean, every day to mention and appreciate the positive elements that your wife is bringing to your life. The leif tov, which inspires and brings about the Ruach HaKodesh. And the last thing I want to say, and I can't emphasize this enough, is if I would have realized how significant the decision of who I married was 14 years ago, and I say it to myself, but to anybody who's married, I would have been even more nervous before my wedding than I was. I would have been like, not that I was so nervous. You know, when a person has shalom bayis in their life, so that's like the core of the apple. It's like the centerpiece of a person's existence. So everything is noveya from that. Person's simchas achayim, person's relationship with their friends, person's learning, person's happiness in their profession. When the centerpiece of a person's life is intact and every tentacle is healthy outside of that, and if you're a person and you're learning well, you're working, the job's going well, but the centerpiece of your life, i.e. your family and relationship with your wife, is not there in a way that's solid, so then everything else loses its sense of value, loses its sense of true meaning. A person that recognizes that the kedusha of their life is going to start from their home, and therefore they have to do anything they can to make sure that it works. More time spent at home, going out, more time talking. A person shouldn't feel like, I'm home now, I'm wasting time from something else. A person shouldn't feel, I'm here, but I want to be somewhere else. A person recognizes the kedusha of their life depends and is totally on the home. But of course, that changes their entire perspective. I want to conclude just with a personal thought. It just happens that my wife has been ill recently. Baruch Hashem, she's not with a week. Baruch Hashem, she's totally fine. So people in our community, in our shul, was like, oh, so they knew that she's in the hospital and she's getting some radiation and other treatments. So people were, you know, constantly, people are amazing, you know, meals and this and that and babies, like whatever people can do, they want to do. And I thought to myself, as this process was going on, and I'll conclude with this thought, that to me, Baruch Hashem, I'm the lucky person in the world. I have an amazing wife, a great marriage, kids I feel close to, jobs that I love, etc., etc. That the centerpiece of your life is beautiful, your relationship with your family, so then, okay, the person's ill, that becomes part of the larger picture, something you deal with. The person I really feel bad for are people that don't feel a sense of fulfillment in their home, there's no fulfillment in a personal sense. If a person has a strong root, a strong base, then everything in life is manageable. Illness, money problems. If a person doesn't have that, then everything becomes difficult. And as time goes on, like via meshing, you know, you'll sit with your wife in your apartment, your kids are there, company's over, company's not over, and you just feel at a certain point in life and the work has been put in, the real sense of shleimus, the real sense of simcha, the real sense of molding has happened, that the proper work and the proper attitudes have happened and have developed. So I'll just briefly repeat what I said, there's five things. The first is the need for berura, of restraint, of not responding, of walking away when need be. B, the sort of shleimus zalman orbach, of the constant recognition of how great a person's wife is. C, how everything can be managed with proper communication skills, and when it's done and how it's done. D, the necessity of learning how to deal with anxiety. E, the leif tov and ruach hakodesh, and the need for being positive and loving and warm. And F, lastly, that the person recognizes that the centerpiece of their life is shalom and shalom bayis, and everything else will work from there, so then the person will have nothing but success and happiness in their life. I don't want to bring up any specific, you know, issue. It's something that maybe people maybe the first few months or a year that they want to raise. Maybe other people have insights about. Nice day there. learn, whatever the case may be, family or. Right.
Yeah.
Let's avoid them. No, I mean, yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. These are things which exist in your marriage, and in many cases it goes on and on and on. And sometimes you don't feel a connection to your mother-in-law or father-in-law, or maybe even more than that, you go to your in-law's house, and then what often happens in young marriage is that, you don't feel settled yet in your marriage, and then you see your in-laws, and you feel to some degree that your wife is some sort of a reflection of them. Something that your mother-in-law or father-in-law does, makes you feel, hesitant or nervous. The dynamic in that home may be different than you'd want to have, and then you feel, is my wife really going to be the one that I want, or she's sort of a reflection of the home that I'm seeing there. I mean, that's some of the why it's important to, and not every case, only marry someone that you really comfortable with your family. Yeah, I think that it's much more difficult at early stages of life because right now you're all living in apartments, right? And to some degree, how many weeks in a row does a person want to spend in Washington Heights, especially if you have a baby and so you need support, and obviously, you want to have a lot to do with your in-laws, with time, so then to some degree the dynamic changes. Not to say that it should be any less, the relationship should always be closed, but a person moves on, a person becomes a little more settled, a person has a home. It's not so much of the feeling of constantly running to there and then feeling like you're, the constant, almost daily, weekly involvement of the family, which almost becomes difficult, but first, it's an easier time making the dharm as well. I think it's important to point out is that, this is a very, stable stage for your wives as well. For instance, just get married. It took my wife maybe a year until she stopped referring to Kinect at their home. Yeah, we're going home for Shabbos, right? That may be crazy. It may be crazy to, so to some degree, and I don't know why it may be crazy, it's just so to some degree, a person obviously, is living here, but if you're still living in an apartment, and a person's close to their parents, so they feel like they have a new life, but they still feel part of an old life, and it takes a while for someone really feels, I'm sort of the woman of the home now, I'm making my own home, I'm making my own direction. A person still very much is in between different things, and that can sometimes create tensions as well, which is not a simple thing. The thing I would just say also, and this is something that the Williams sister is very adamant about, is that I know that it comes up with at least one person who's present, that a person has to say that my first priority is my wife. There are many cases in life where there's a tension between a person's wife and a person's mother. A person's always worried about, their mother, pleasing their mother, doing this and doing that. And the person always say, my wife comes first, let her needs come first. If my wife doesn't want to, spend more time with my mother, whatever the case is, the person's priority always is their wife or anybody else in family. And that's not always easy for a man also to say, I'm sort of making a little bit of a break with my family a little bit to meet the needs of my wife. The so it says that when a person's mother is still alive, he's car faithful emo. He's and then once the wife comes in, so then the wife sort of takes the place. So in between those two spots are a little bit difficult. In between sort of feeling car to your mother and then car to your wife or your husband, that can sometimes be challenging. They have an openly an issue.
I'm wondering, what's the national problem? The general idea of Shabbos talking about people inviting other people after Shabbos, I think there's a bigger question about being a home for Shabbos, not inviting up to Matthew Kier, the whole Shabbos.
Sure, right, absolutely.
And the benefits of that, the non-benefits.
Right, that's a good question. If people haven't seen it before, I presume most people have, the fascinating Sefer HaChinuch, which really relates back up to your point about Sharm Shona. People know that the Machlokes Yishodom slash Acharonim about Sharm Shona, is it just based in the military, is it Kamsa person to assume, or is it really based on other things that Chinuch seems to assume? So the Chinuch said that there's so many challenges in marriage that if a person could spend their Sharm Shona just sort of involved with their wife. So by the end of that year, they say, my wife, everything she does is great. Her cooking, the way that she looks, the way that she smells, the way that she does that. So when you're then around, in the future, around other people, so then you feel such a connection to your wife. What she does that's rugged, what she does becomes normal, what everyone else does becomes sort of abnormal to some degree. So based on that, there would certainly be a value of minimizing this constant contact with other couples, so you can really just focus on your wife. And also partially what I said before, that there's sort of a natural comparison that people have. Well, this guy seems like he learns more, my husband seems like he's doing this, my wife, you know, to some degree until a relationship is more stable, so maybe there is a good idea to focus more on the couple itself. But that being said, a person has to know that, you know, sometimes they just sit in the same apartment week after week and just having meals, sometimes it adds more vibrancy, or adds like more of an aliveness or being part of the community. Sometimes, you know, there may be a sad to say, to, you know, to entertain more, you feel like a little sort of better about the, you know, sort of the development of your family and your life and going to another stage. So I think it's probably a balance between the two of them.
I have a pretty small family,
right.
And although sometimes it can be loud at the table of family members, it's still generally a smaller childhood table.
Right.
So when we come into the situation, often I find that my wife always, you know, she wants to have people over very often, a lot.
Right.
I see that there's if she's willing to do it, I think there's a good mile to it.
Sure.
In this situation, because it helps her feel like she
right.
connection to other people,
absolutely.
And part of that community, and it's part of just her personality, which is to give and she just decides to
right.
do all that.
Right, right, absolutely.
That's already her personality.
Right.
So, if I don't have anyone coming for Shabbos, she'll say like, okay, I'm just going to put out a place and you'll go to the Lakemanders, and you'll have somebody come over, and
right.
people are always those rooms are very lively. So obviously, I think that it just depends also on the having the balance, but also on the personalities of the people involved. 100%. Some people are more to themselves. Some people are more like if they're not able to have people over,
right.
then.
100%. No, I agree. No, that's the thing. It's the balance.
Right.
Thing. Yeah. But you're right about me. I don't need to tell you. It's an amazing visa, and it's going to be a great model for, you know. At the same time, I'm not saying that you don't feel this way, but let's say someone's in an early position, but he felt sometimes it's too much. You know, to be able to sort of feel and vocalize and say, you know what, like, I love that we do this, but it's important to me that we have, you know, meals that are X, Y, and Z, so like, not to feel afraid to, I'm not saying that you do, but in a different situation, say, you know what, I'm really sensitive to your needs, but I just want to make sure that X, Y, and Z, the person should feel, you know, comfortable, you know, curtailing another person's desire because something that they need as well, as long as it's reasonable, you know.
About moving. I've heard like some people make suggestions to me, there's a lot, but there's definitely benefits in the first year or like when a marriage is younger,
right.
just spending time away from like both your families.
I would definitely hear Milo of that. You know, I think it very much depends on circumstances. You know, on the other hand, you know, some person could say, you know what, I'm going through such a good transition in my life, you know, and it's important to me to feel like I have a good support system. Maybe not just for your marriage, it's when a person first has a kid and stuff like that. You know, sometimes a person feels like they need to have a large support system, but definitely, depending on the circumstances, it could be very positive also. If you feel that the presence of a parent is too, you know, is too hovering, then sometimes that break is feeling positive. But, I think it very much depends on people, circumstances, needs,
so,
et cetera.
I don't know everyone's circumstance here, so I'm assuming, like, I don't know if anyone has a kid yet.
Right.
So the question is, I always hear about how daughters need to be with their mothers when they first give birth, but in my mind, I sort of feel like maybe that's a little bit overrated, like, they need to be with their mothers because their mothers happen to be there.
Right.
But what if their mothers weren't there?
Right.
Then, like, then what would they do?
Absolutely.
I'm sure, like, they would still,
right.
like, yeah,
if you're asking whether or not, I mean, this is sort of more of a specific issue, if you're asking whether or not the person survived without a parent there, it's obviously the answer is yes. Right, no. But again, to not, I think it's something that males often do, because a guy always feels, like maybe mentioned, it's embarrassing, when we first got married, like in 95, we were living in Washington Heights on Bennett Avenue, it was like boiling hot, it was like, May, my wife was pregnant, it was 3 in the morning, she couldn't see, she'd work the next day, and she's like fetching, like a normal person, it's a million degrees, and blah, so I joke about this now, like, we all joke about this now, I'm like, honey, just Jesus is God bearer. Like, you know, like, Darwin's really assuming this is God, but, like, don't worry, you know? And it's like a classic, like, comment of, like, the person, like, being a total jerk, you know, where, like, this guy mentality of, like, yeah, you can handle everything, and don't worry, and, like, push yourself, right? And, like, the complete sensitivity towards, like, the real sort of human, feminine, emotional needs that, that another person has. The guy's always like, okay, just handle the deal, like, that's what life is. Even if you're a deep emotional person, a guy, but guy tendencies in general sort of feel, this is a big area where women, especially with hormonal changes and feeling overwhelmed by a baby and dealing with a baby and this and that, where it's very, very, very healthy and necessary, not necessary, very, very helpful to have a parent around to feel like, to take away from that overwhelmed feeling a little bit. But generally, the point I think is a good point, where guys always feel, okay, just deal with whatever is going on. And, but so the thing is, I just want to conclude on one last point, and I said before, it's one of those amazing Gemara and Brachos from Dafei Mabez about how Rabbi Elazar came to visit Riochanan last year, and Riochanan was very ill. So Elazar asked him, he says, you know, do you love the Yisurin of Haviven Alepha, right? So he says, not the Yisurin and not the Star. Like, nothing, I'm like miserable. You know, like, I'm not enjoying this. So the Lashon of the Gemara, the term of the Lashon, that he raised him from the bed. Like, he was like making him from from the bed. That's all the Gemara says. Like, he raised him. What does that mean? Was that because he also on the bed? So I once saw a quote in Maharal. I looked at Maharal to show God this in Brachos. He doesn't have this. And I believe the first thing, but that whole idea was that, like, Rabbi Yochanan and Elazar sort of shared in Rabbi Yochanan's discomfort. Rabbi Yochanan was going through something. It also made him feel like he wasn't going through it alone. Like, lifting up in the bed, like the image of sort of being there with another person, and that itself was a response to the Yisurin. So I say that in conclusion, just that people feel whatever they are going through, whether the issues are non-existent, minor, persons that need small tikkun in, or the person becomes totally overwhelmed towards real serious issues that certainly do exist. I've seen a number of guys in YU before, and I'm sure there's many more, guys who just felt that for like 5-6 months, like, miserable, but no one to speak to it, feel like no one else would understand it, everyone else has a great marriage, and I'm going through, from large to small and everything in between, that people should feel that they could reach out and have other people sharing what they're going through, whether it be friends, whether it be, you know, me, whether it be a Rebbe, whether it be a person, whatever the person is that if a person is guilted by themselves, then usually they can't deal with productively. But sometimes having someone else sort of join together in whatever the issue is in life, not just now, but down the road as well, and that's totally something that psychologically a person needs, and without that, sometimes it's very difficult as an individual to productively deal with the situation. Well, thank you very much. And if people, at some point, they want to continue the conversation in private, any points, so you know, we're fine. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Okay.